From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in January of 2014 when this talk show debuted with this theme song, the one you're listening to right here, right now. We could put it full a little bit. Let's listen to some. Now, by now, it's certainly been our hope that you would associate this music with Connections, but I always find it funny when listeners discover that it's an actual song from an actual band. And the band is, by the way, just outstanding. They're called Rah Rah Riot. They've got some roots in our region. We're happy to claim them, with some background at both Syracuse University and the Finger Lakes. And we do nearly 500 hours of new shows each year. This hour, more than most, I'm pretty nervous. I want this to be worth the while of my guest, who is the lead singer of Rah Rah Riot. By now, the band has a really interesting musical resume. They have toured around the world. They have fans who will sometimes thank them for playing the quote-unquote old stuff at concerts, and then they'll reference stuff that's from 2016, when the band is a decade older than that or more. It's smack in the middle of their discography. It's interesting what happens to bands over time. And that's even an interesting word, discography. Rah Rah Riot debuted before streaming was everything. I mean, streaming was a thing, but CDs were still pretty prominent. The music industry felt pretty linear. Bands would record some stuff, they'd try to impress record labels, they'd hope to get signed, and then maybe they'd have a single that would explode on popular radio. If the first album didn't do great, they'd try a sophomore album, maybe tweak the sound a bit. A lot has changed. It's hard to get people to buy a full album these days. So sometimes bands feel like they can release individual songs or try things a little differently. Just about everyone can get their music out there, but the question is, how do you get anyone to listen to it? How much does terrestrial radio matter anymore? How do you break through or stay strong if you've been doing it for a while? We've got a lot to talk about this hour with Wes Miles, one of the great vocalists you will hear. And I want to say to Wes, it is an absolute honor to have you on the program, man. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Patrick Hoskin is with me in studio, arts reporter for City Magazine, who has his own Rah Rah Riot story from back in the day, yeah?
I do. I very much do. There was the Rah Rah Riot played at my college, St. Bonaventure University, 2009 when I was a freshman, and there was very much like a big effort to get Rah Rah Riot on our campus. When I entered, it was right after the first album, The Rum Line, had come out, and by the following spring, Rah Rah Riot was playing there. So thanks, Wes. That was cool.
Nice. Yeah, sure. We had our share of college shows in those days, for sure.
See, Patrick literally just did. So one of my favorite interviews we've done on this program was with Ryan Miller of Guster, who was in studio here when they were playing back, oh boy, 5-6 years. No, even more than that, 7 years ago. And Ryan Miller said that that a lot of times when you work in music, people will do a saw you. When they meet you, they'll say saw you. Saw you in Tucson. Saw you in L.A. You know, saw you in Tokyo. It's what people always do. And then he said he finally met Paul McCartney, and he found himself doing the saw you. Like, oh, Paul, saw, like, I saw you at the Rose Bowl. I saw you. And he's like, oh, my gosh, I'm doing the saw you to Paul McCartney. So, Patrick, you just did the saw you.
I did the saw you, yeah.
I mean, Wes, you get that all the time. That's a nice thing, though, isn't it, Wes?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's fun when it happens when the band's all together, because inevitably some people don't remember the show and some people do, because the band has been around a long time. And the four of us, the main four of us, have been together since the beginning. Rebecca, Matthew, Milo, and I, and Kenny, our drummer, has been with us for, well, more than 10 years. So it's funny to see who remembers which show and who's like, oh, thanks. I don't remember playing for you, but I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
Well, let me also welcome Adam Gold, who is not only a Rah Rah Riot fan, owner of Funk and Waffles in Syracuse, and has got his own deep history with the band. Hello, Adam.
Hey, everybody.
Adam, you want to tell people a little bit about your connection to Rah Rah Riot?
Oh, man, absolutely. Shucks, you know, I had the pleasure of recording those guys back when they were first starting out, when I was a student and, you know, working in audio production. Wes and I lived together for a while. We played in our own bands together, and I've also had the pleasure of hosting them at Funk and Waffles in the past.
Well, and I'm sure Wes remembers every one of those shows.
Patrick, yeah, I remember for sure. Yeah.
You've been to Funkin' Waffles, Patrick Hoskin.
Yeah. I have been to Funkin' Waffles. I've never been there for a show, but I have been there to eat waffles.
Well, that's good. Yeah. So we're going to cover some ground, but I have to start by asking Wes, you know, is it weird that a Rah Rah Riot song is an NPR regional talk show theme song? Is that like even on your radar, or is that just like not anything you've ever thought about?
No, it's something that comes up from time to time, but I was a little, I guess I didn't realize that it was the theme of this song. calling in and hearing that loop, I was like, oh, that's funny. I haven't listened to that in a while, so it's funny to hear it again.
Yeah, listeners, we're just going to do this for a brief minute just to prove to you that we took this from a song with lyrics and everything, and you're going to hear some of Wes's. He's such a good vocalist. But the song's called Shadow Casting. So let's listen to a little of the actual song so you know what you're hearing every day on Connections. It's still a banger, Patrick Hoskin. Patrick and I are just loving this in the studio. What do you think?
I'm loving it. I'm listening to it in really nice headphones, which is something I've not done in a long time. And I'm just like hearing all the strings, like even on the chorus, like it sounds really, really, really good.
Does it feel quaint to you, Wes? What does it sound like to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm listening on rather lousy headphones. So I'm like thinking about all the changes I wish I'd made. But it's, it's funny. Yeah, it's a different time for us.
That is something that is curious to me. And again, I'm thinking of the conversation with Ryan Miller from Guster, who said that, you know, when you've got a number of albums and you've been doing it for a while, you'll play shows and, you know you're going to have fans who have been there from the beginning. You'll have fans who are maybe new to your stuff. But there's going to be people who want that first album stuff or the first songs that they fell in love with. And Ryan kind of said what he doesn't love about the early Guster stuff from the early mid-90s, back when I was in college listening to them. He said, you know, he doesn't think that music has a spine and a groove the way that a lot of their stuff did starting with their third album. So they stay a little bit away from the older stuff, but you could see that he kind of like listens to the old mostly acoustic stuff and is kind of like, eh, you know, like not loving the sensibility of it or thinking about what he'd change. And does that strike you the same way, Wes? Or do you look back at your early stuff and still think, you know, hey, it's not exactly how we do it today, but I could listen to Boy all day. I mean, like we can do that all day.
Yeah, it's complicated because we had some good success right off the bat from our first record. So in a way, I don't know. I think also in that time we could feel it coming a little bit. So I'm always like, I'm kind of grateful how that first record turned out as it did. And we do play, we pretty much always play at least one or two or more songs from that first record live even today, but yeah, we went through different paths and we experimented with different levels of edginess, as he put it. But I think I've always been like a person where like you're always kind of promoting your first record because, that was the introduction, or at least that's how I feel about our catalog. It was a perfect encapsulation of these people that we were. And You know, and there's special things about it that can never be repeated. Mm-hmm. Like it was a collaboration with our original drummer who passed away, and we'll never get a chance to do that again. So it is really special to have that document of those times. And each record since then is, you know, it's just another snapshot. And, you know, these are the things you tell yourself when you're trying to finish. You know, it's not, you're not trying to get something perfect. You're trying to, you know, finish the snapshot of the moment you're in and what you're thinking. So, yeah, it's a tough question to answer. It's just kind of, I love our first record and I love parts of all of our subsequent records, but you're also kind of constantly tweaking, you know, it's a little bit of a reaction from the previous one mm-hmm. to the next one.
We're talking to Wes Miles from Rah Rah Riot, and listeners in our show notes will get you linked up to their music, but you can find Rah Rah Riot music anywhere. Wes, where do you want people to find your music? I'm always curious to know where people do want the audience to find them now.
Yeah, that's a good question too. You know, it's like which is the least of all the evils. I mean, I'd love for people to just find us at a show.
Yeah.
You know, or it's funny, like you were talking about how the industry has changed. And we always think about, like, you know, those early days when we were trying not to let the record leak. And then the second record, we had to leak it early, but only a certain amount, you know. And then by the third record, it was like leaking wasn't a thing. It was just like it would go on to, you know, Spotify or whatever it is. And it's changed a lot since then, too. So, you know, if they don't know us by now, they're learning about us now, I guess, if you're listening to this. Just go look at a video or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, we'll get back to what's changed in the industry coming up here. I do want to ask Adam Gold how you think about the value of these of live music now, because it has taken on such an added value for bands. I mean, live music was always important, but now it's you know, unless you're a superpower, it's not easy to get paid. Streams don't always add up to, you know, a living. So how do you see the live scene, and have you noticed any change, Adam?
I mean, for sure, there's been a huge shift ever since the COVID era. You know, a lot of things have cleared out. You know, a lot of bands are not on the road anymore. A lot of venues don't exist anymore. You know, a lot of those revenue streams have been changed in a way where there's just such a smaller market for a lot of this. From the music venue owner, I see that in general, I don't know what it's like down in New York City, but up here, I mean, bars just close earlier. Like, you don't see a lot of places staying open until last call anymore. And that shaves off almost like half the band's performance. You know, we used to have concerts from like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And now they're really like 8 p.m. to 11. And ironically, a lot of us musicians, you know, because I also play, like, you kind of love it. Like, the earlier things kind of great in a way, because, you know, you get to sleep at a more appropriate time and you kind of live like a little easier life. But we're really missing a huge chunk of what life was like when going out to see a show started at like 11 o'clock or midnight. And for the music venues, we're selling 3 hours less beer than we used to, you know? So it's been pretty devastating for the industry, I think, as a whole.
Yeah. When I was in college, I have a twin brother who dropped out of school to pursue music for a living. I had an older brother who did the same. They were both very, very good. They were sort of Ohio, Michigan, Midwest touring bands that, you know, played with a lot of big name bands, never broke through themselves, but, you know, kind of did that for years. And early on, I would ask my brother, like, so when are you guys playing? He's like, well, the show's at 9. And I'm like, well, I'll be there at midnight then. Like I'm not coming at 9, man. Right, I know what you mean. And that world has kind of changed. And I hadn't thought about, Adam, I mean, all the different sort of downstream impacts of that, but we're living it. And maybe as we get older, it feels a little more normal, but that's a tough go if that market is kind of thinner and tighter and, you know, the hours are tighter. Nobody stays out late. I mean, everything. Patrick, what's open late in this city? What's open late in Rochester?
I can't tell you because I'm asleep at 9 or 10 p.m. most nights because I have a three-year-old. But there are other people that could answer that question very good. But it does present an interesting opportunity, right, for like shows, you know, kind of maybe in unconventional ways. And in fact, I know, Wes, one of the earliest Rara Riot shows, I'm pretty sure, was like sort of an unconventional thing at what was then called the Carrier Dome on campus at Syracuse University, mm-hmm. right? You guys actually played like kind of a, it was like a relay.
Yeah, Relay for Life, I believe, yeah.
Which is an interesting, so what do you remember when your, I'm curious when your actual set time was?
Oh man, I have no idea. Although I do feel like it was probably, yeah, around midnight.
Right,
because I think it went like 24 hours straight. I forget what the exact charity was for, but yeah, it was yeah, I think it was pretty late.
And when you're,
I wouldn't be surprised if it was midnight or later.
And when you're in college, that's an easier thing to do.
Yeah, it was like not a big deal, but yeah, you guys are right. I mean, we as artists now, you know, that are in our 40s. All of us have kids too, so it's like playing early is really ideal. And it seems like it does seem like, you know, what Adam was saying, that even the, you know, it's like everyone kind of agreed to this, like the patrons of the bars too. You know, but it is kind of a big change for everything. So, and in New York, in the city, there are definitely a lot of venues closing as well. So it's kind of still figuring out what this phase is going to be like.
Yeah, Adam mentioned really marking it at the pandemic, and that's, sometimes it feels trite, but I think it's true. I mean, we got so used to just, you know, being home and not being out, or not being out late, or not doing much. And it's easy to say, well, you know, pandemic's over, but culturally, the effects, people will be measuring this who are smarter than me for a long time. Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Wes Miles, who is the lead of Rah Rah Riot, a band you should know. And if you listen to Connections, you do know them, whether you know that or not. Rah Rah Riot is the creators of a song called Shadowcasting, which is the theme music for this program. It's not Rah Rah Riot's most famous song, but to me, when we were looking for something that really clicked with the vibe of what we wanted the show to be 10, 11 years ago, listened to hundreds, if not thousands, of songs and cuts, and then all of a sudden it was like, no, that's it. That's it right there. And thank you to Barsook Records for saying yes to that. That is very, very cool. And so we're talking to Wes Miles about the journey of Rah Rah Riot and where things are now. We're going to listen to some new music in just a moment, and really excited about that. Adam Gold is on the line with us as well, who is the owner of Funk and Waffles in Syracuse. Patrick Hoskin, arts reporter for City Magazine, who himself organized a Rah Rah Riot show back at Bonaventure back in the day. And this really does fit into how things have changed. I want to believe, Patrick, that this still happens on campuses, but I mean, we kind of did the same thing. We were at Ohio University in the late 90s. I was in the late 90s. You're a little younger than me, but it was the same kind of vibe where there were bands that you knew were awesome and maybe underappreciated or up and coming, and it felt like the biggest thing to get them.
Yeah.
And you wanted Rah Rah Riot, and it's like, we're getting Rah Rah Riot. It was a cultural event on campus, right?
It was a cultural event. We when I arrived at Bonaventure in the fall of 2008, the Rum Line, the first record, had just come out, and I was a freshman, and all of the upperclassmen, like the sophomores, juniors, who were already working at our college radio station, WSBU, like the music directors, the station manager, they were all very, oh, you haven't heard this yet? What are you doing? And it put it in front of me so directly, so quickly, the record and the music of Rah Rah Riot. And yeah, it became this kind of crusade that we all made sure that, like, you know, okay, what little money we had to offer that we had to beg the university to do. It was very much this, like, you know, we didn't, it's not real. As far as I know, there weren't like house venues or anything like that. Is the community wasn't quite that like able to maintain that kind of a music like ecosystem. But in order to kind of rally all that and to say, well, you haven't heard them, I'm gonna pull up their session that they did with this other college radio station. Like, that was how we, you know, obviously we had the songs in rotation, but it all felt very, very organic, to the point where the band actually came to campus. It was like, yeah, this is that song. Actually, it's not that dissimilar to this with the theme. It was like these songs that we've been playing in rotation on our college radio station for months and months and months that you have 100% heard because we play them all the time. You actually get to check them out now. And it felt very cool, like a culmination of, you know, of all that work and effort and kind of DIY, like spreading the word.
And so this is where, Wes, those stories I find almost romantic, and there's like a kind of a grassroots beauty in a kind of way, a real personal connection, because everybody on Bonaventure's campus who goes to that show, they could probably still talk about that today. Now, Rah Rah Riot's played thousands of shows, but everybody was there that night. That was a big deal. And I wonder now, Wes, I don't want to be the old guy yelling at clouds, but like, is there a, does it feel more transactional? Does it feel less personally connected? Has that changed at all over time? You know, just the intimacy of live shows and the connection to fans and the way these things happen? Or can you talk me down from being concerned and yelling at that cloud?
Well, I think there's some truth to what you're saying, for sure. I think it's hard to really compare, because, you know, you're only a young band once. And while things are working differently now, you know, for us, I can't speak to what it's like to start out right now.
Sure.
You know, yeah. That's not my experience. So, but what I do know is that there are small bands that are, and artists that are making waves, and it's a different world than it was. But, and there are opportunities for bands like us to have an intimate show. You know, I think when you get to a certain like level, you want to, you know, there's all these business strategies about doing things like undersells and oversell, or like, you know, taking all the tickets off the table and all these types of tours and how much money you want to invest and all that stuff. But we did on the summer tour with Vampire Weekend, we took a day that was going to be a day off and did a show with our friends at Day Trotter, which is it was kind of like a blog that recorded music, kind of like just almost like a before podcast sort of thing. It was like a, you know, you'd go into their studio and play a few songs and then they'd release it, and Sean, the owner, would write a blurb about it, and it's very kind of like a small town, intimate vibe. And we reconnected with him and we played a very, very low key, like bar show in Iowa in July with only a week's notice. You know, we were kind of waffling on the decision, but we ended up doing it. And it was, you know, one of the most fun shows we've had in a long time. The tour was incredible on the whole, but being able to do your own shows is always like a special thing. So, and for people to just hear about it within a week, you know, there was some word of mouth going on, and, you know, we only had a certain amount of time to promote it. So to see the reaction in kind of a small town and an intimate vibe like that, and, you know, the sound doesn't have to be perfect. It's more about like seeing people and, you know, just having fun. So there are opportunities to still do that, you know, to connect on a deeper level, with fans and friends. And so it's hard to predict when that might be, though.
Well, I mean, maybe I shouldn't be cynical or that worried. I mean, if I go through what my 12-year-old listens to, he loves AJR. He loves bands like Band Camino, Valley, Wild Rivers. I mean, like, they have kind of regional strong followings that feel, that at least it looks from as an outsider's perspective, it looks like it was when I was in college, maybe, and there's that rabid fandom of a young band. So, I mean, maybe that's still happening in that way. But certainly the way things happen is changing. You heard Wes Miles from Rah Rah Riot say, you know, where people access music, there's only sort of the lesser of evils. You know, people aren't buying really albums anymore, and a lot of people don't want to buy albums and don't expect to have to. And so that has changed. Wes, there's one other aspect of this that I think has changed, but I really want to hear from you on this. I've heard you tell a story about a time earlier in your career where you had a chance to kind of, I don't know if it was a showcase, but you're trying to impress a bunch of labels. And, you know, that was sort of the way in. It was like, impress this label, you know, get in front of somebody, get a chance to get signed, and hopefully you get a hit single and off you go. But apparently you also took the opportunity to go to a sushi restaurant that night, and like an hour before your show, you guys had like the biggest sushi meal of your lives, and you ended up playing a clunker. Is that a true story?
That's very true. Yeah. Yeah. We were playing for, it wasn't like a showcase, but it was like, this person from this major label's coming and they're very interested. And I think that, I think they bought us a big fancy dinner, and, you know, being like a early 20s, you know, students, we all like jumped at the opportunity. And, but it was, it's often remembered as one of the worst shows that we played in the first several years. But it's kind of, it worked out in the end, because I think we're very, very happy with Barsuk, and they did a lot of things for us that might not have been as easy to do at a bigger label. So you never know how these things will work out. But be careful of the dinner before the show.
That's funny. Adam Gold, I mean, like, another kind of common question for people in the industry that gets a little trite, but given the context here, I'm curious, is there a favorite show, or is there a show that hits you in a way that is like, this is what live music is supposed to be, whether it was at Funkin' Waffles or elsewhere?
Oh, it's so crazy to think of that. You know, we had this space on the campus that was in a basement and like didn't even really have windows that like showed the sunlight. You know, it was this kind of like grungy, sort of dark, low ceiling. And when it was packed with people, it was really something else, something that you cannot achieve in any sort of medium or larger size venue. It's whether it's the sound or the sweat or like just the convergence of all the people. I do remember the Rah Rah Riot and Vampire Weekend show at Funkin' Waffles, and that was like absolutely outrageous. Vampire was like just hitting the scene, and they opened up the show. They weren't even the headliner at that point. It was them supporting Rah Rah. So I think of like shows like that where you've just got like 50 too many people in a small space, and just the energy is it's tactile. You could just like feel it in the air, you know. It's like a, like there's going to be like a tornado coming or something, but it's like for 2 hours, you know. And there's just something really special about that. So I think of shows like that. And we used to have a reggae band that was like every week at the Funkin' Waffles, and they're playing original music, but it was very rootsy, and between the bass and all the bodies and the heat, it really were just some really special moments that I really don't think I've ever felt since. And I've been to many, many concerts, even at my current venue, that just didn't really get to that level, that it's just like, you know, college age and thick, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Adam, I wonder how you feel about the energy it shows today versus really even 20 years ago. So we were talking to the actor Alan Cumming on the show last month, and he said that he thinks that kind of the technological addiction that a lot of us have leads people, even in live performance venues, in kind of the settings that you just described, people are missing out on having those high energy tornado of energy moments because, well, they want a good video to show their friends later. And the way he put it was, do you want to have an experience, or do you want to be able to prove to others later that you had an experience, or do you want to claim that you had an experience with some sort of visual component later? And his concern is that it's actually drained some of the energy in live performance because people are often on their devices. They're not as attentive. They're not as plugged in, or they're too worried about getting a picture or a video. Do you find that to be true?
You know, there's like, it's kind of like two sides of the coin. Like, some people are coming to like put their phone away and focus and like really dig in and like enjoy that. And I think, you know, at our space, because we're only a 200 cap room and you could basically sit at the bar like 3 feet from the kick drum, you know, I think we have more people in this town that are really trying to absorb that live music experience. You know, but I imagine Wes, when you're playing in front of like 5,000 people in like Switzerland or something, you know, I imagine the front row has got a bunch of phones out, right? Like, so I don't know. I mean, I'd like to hear his take on it, but I know what we're seeing at our small venue is a lot of appreciation and respect for the musician, and that's kind of what we like pride ourselves in, you know.
Yeah. And what do you think, Wes?
Yeah, I think Adam's right. It's a double-edged sword. Like, you know, sometimes it can be exciting if there's a lot of phones going off because it means it's something relevant is happening. You know, if people aren't quite maybe showing the energy in the traditional ways that, you know, I think Alan is right that it's like, it is a distraction and we're a little too plugged in. But if that means that the attendees of the concert are a little more physically reserved, and that's just like one form of feedback. So I try not to get too down about, you know, phones being out unless they're like really annoying about it. but yeah, there's only so many times in, you know, I recently went to a show at Lincoln Center. It was Sun. I don't know if you say the O, but it's Sun or Sun O. Just very, very, the loudest show I've ever seen. And, you know, I'm like many of us, I'm probably a little bit too connected to my phone. I try to stay away from social media, but there's some requirements for the job, you know. But this was like from the moment it started, I was completely unable to think or just sense anything outside of the room. And it was a special thing that you don't often feel even at shows today, I think partly because of the phones and all that stuff. But it was a like a beautiful meditative moment for me. It just the volume itself just forces you to put everything else in your mind away and just literally be present and witness. And I loved it so much. It was just such a cool thing to experience. So, you know, I try to focus at shows when I'm in the audience and try to bring along bands with us that we like to give them a chance to, you know, see the people that we bring out, because I think generally they are very respectful. So, yeah, it's tough, but there's always a good amount of people who are there for, I don't want to say that other people are there for the wrong reasons, but they're there for you know, the immediate present connection, which is good.
Yeah. After we take this only break of the hour, we're going to listen to some of the newer stuff from Wes Miles and Rah Rah Riot. Wes is with us, and we've got Adam Gold, who is the owner of Funk and Waffles in Syracuse, which is a great venue for music. And according to Patrick Hoskin, arts reporter for City Magazine, it's also a great venue for waffles, which is, yeah, what's important. It's great for both. We're talking live music. We're talking the state of the music industry. And I'm just really grateful to have time with Wes, because Rah Rah Riot is the band that you hear on the Connections theme music every day. And I'm grateful for that. So let's get this only break. We'll come back and listen to some of their new stuff. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we bring back a couple of recent conversations that got a lot of attention from listeners. In the first hour, the subject is death cafes. We talk to a local woman who hosts these cafes around town to help people better confront and deal with dying. Then in our second hour, a conversation about Sobriety Sounds, an organization helping people in recovery through music. Three times an hour, Shadowcast. I mean, I think if Wes Miles lived in the Rochester Finger Lakes region, I think he'd stop listening to the show. I think he'd think that's too much. That's too much Shadowcasting. We cannot get enough of Shadowcasting. And
love it.
Yeah, no, it's
play great. Away.
That's awesome.
Four times a day.
Four times. So I want to listen to. Let's start with The Wish, if we could.
Sure.
Let's listen to a little bit of this tune. Well, maybe we can at least. we have a 30-second cap, or can we? Let's listen to 30 seconds of The Wish, and then we're going to talk about some of Wes's current writing. Let's listen. What keeps pulling you away? We got time to waste. It don't bother me. Didn't get my wish, so it slipped right off. Should we share one kiss before we both drift off? All right, I see why you like this better than shadow casting. I want to just give you some space to talk about this tune, and then I've got my own sort of like armchair analysis of the lyrics. But tell me a little bit about The Wish first here, Wes.
The Wish was written and produced along with, well, it was produced by Rostam, and he helped me finish writing it. Rostam's been a long time collaborator of mine. Even some of the elements on our very first record, but at least very, very much an impact on, well, we did a record together, Discovery, in 2009. We wrote Water together and Need Your Light from our fourth record, and a couple other songs. So basically, in the pandemic at some point, I was getting into finger picking guitar because I was like, I'm really bad at guitar and I'd like to get better. So I started working on, just like learning to do that better. And I had just kind of hit him up about doing some writing and recording, I guess like 2 years ago at this point. And we just made some dates, and I sent him this demo, and we worked on it together. Had some basically just thrown together in two separate trips of like 3 or 4 days each. Here it is.
Well, I want to read the first verse and the chorus, although there's definitely an evolution of what's going on in this song. But you write, "One night as we got down to bed, aimless conversation echoed up the stairs. Thoughts of where the future might unfold, the whole world in chaos, everywhere but here. We could lie in bed all day. You don't have to stay, but it would comfort me. What keeps pulling you away? We got time to waste. It don't bother me. If I had one wish, we could take right off. Should we share one kiss before we both drift off?" And I was like sitting down this morning before the show, just thinking like, why is this song hitting me in a certain way? So maybe it's just my own interpretation, and it's nowhere near where you are in writing the song. But, you know, we're kind of similar age. And when Rye Rye Riot came onto the scene, I think back to kind of those days, and it feels to me like the world, things that were going on in the world, the news, you know, sort of casting a gaze around everywhere and just gesturing at everything, it didn't feel so existential. It felt like the stakes weren't so high all the time, whether it's an election or events or things that we understand better about the world. It just did not feel like everything was about to break all the time. And it seems like the person at the center of the song is kind of acknowledging that everything is so fraught and on fire and just wants to be in the bunker with someone to kind of get away from that chaos and find comfort with. But that's just me, you know, being, where are you at? Like what's in your brain when you're writing this song?
Yeah, that's very well said. I think, like has been mentioned, I think, the pandemic has really rattled a lot of people. And I think the psychological damage is hard to quantify. But it does feel like everything is a lot more fraught now. And even going, like you said, a little bit before the pandemic, it's not just about that. It's, you know, we see people, I think in this day, people feel a precarity with their livelihoods, and, it's just unsettling. So I think making a love song today that doesn't acknowledge that in some ways, well, it's challenging, I guess, to make it connect without acknowledging this precariousness. So it's just, it's a little bit about, yeah, I think you might feel like the world is crumbling and there's war and, you know, private equity out there, decay of various types. But there still is love, you know, there still is reason to be happy and joyful. And there are happy people, you know, so yeah, I think you put it very well. I'll leave it at that.
I think it's a beautiful tune. It also just, I mean, it's a great sound. And Patrick and I were talking during our brief break about, you know, Patrick really, you know, you're in college, a little bit younger than you are now. You get into this band, then, you know, you have kids, you're distracted by a bunch of things. You might have missed it when a new Rah Rah Riot album dropped, which I'm not going to blame you. I mean, it is life. But it's interesting how fandom has different layers, Patrick, how, you know, you're going to always be interested in this band because you have loved them, even if over time you get distracted by all these other things. Then you hear a song like this and you go, oh, well, that's why I love them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's nice. It's nice to like hear that in the context of the foundation that I have of all the previous stuff. And I also, you know, I know Rah Rah Riot toured doing a 10th anniversary of the first record, The Rum Line, in 2018. And where you guys played the record. And I went to see that show in Brooklyn because it was very much like, well, yeah, like I need to be at this show. But what I liked about that is that it was a celebration of, you know, kind of connecting with those earlier memories, while also just like, but you're playing them now, or I mean then 6 years ago, but like as that version of Rah Rah Riot, which means like you're essentially connecting the present with the past in all these ways. And so I try to think about that with like in sort of long-term fandom with any band, listening to The Wish, listening to, you know, Ghost Under Rocks, any of these other like really classic ones. I think there's kind of a nice blend of the old and new that kind of gets carried forward.
Is that a pretty good endorsement, Wes?
Yeah, I'll take it.
That's awesome. Adam, how do you feel about the evolution of the sound here?
Man. Oh, man. I love that. I love like the lo-fi stuff, you know, and like it takes me back to like when we were just like messing around in the studio. You know, I had the pleasure of having my fingers on the faders, making my own little versions of the Rah Rah Riot tune, you know. So it kind of takes me back to that era of like, you know, just kind of more about the content than like necessarily like the way that like it's not like a high def thing, you know, you don't need a high def thing to feel emotions, you know? And so I really like that element where you're really kind of get a little grittier with it, you know? Mm.
Well, we have another tune we can listen to. Let's listen to some of a song called Friendly Neighbor from Rah Rah Riot.
All I wanted so much is to be your friendly neighbor. I could help unclog the pipes or pull magic from the sky. I've been working real hard at wasting my time, but to be your friendly neighbor, that would make my night.
All right, Wes, what are we saying here? This one, I really want to hear from you on this one.
Well... This the chorus really just started as a I was kind of just like I was alone in my apartment for a night, and my neighbors were having like a rager party. I mean, at this point maybe it was 12 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago or something. And I just started playing the piano, and I was kind of just basically making fun of myself for like you know, living below this massive party and like sort of, you know, it's just like comforting to know. It's like, it's when you're alone and you see people doing something, sometimes, you know, people call it FOMO, but there's also a part of it that's like, oh, I'm glad I know what's happening so that I don't have to go, you know? So it was just like a way to comfort myself, about you know, it's just like about alienation in the modern world and atomization of people, and you know, your freedom is a beautiful thing, but at a certain point we're all alone too. So, yeah, it's just all these, it's about loneliness, but comfort in being, being able to be by yourself and do what you want, I guess.
God, I just love the opening line. Life is great. And then you say, right outside my condo, loud, so loud, Saturday is the worst. Yeah. it's such a great contrast. And people can relate. I kind of, there's a part of it that I don't even like about myself that I recognize, where you say, I count the steps until I'm back inside. But then I think, I should probably spend more time with my neighbors. I should probably be a little bit more neighborly, but I really just want to be in pajama pants. You know, I mean, like it's, yeah, it's a struggle. It's a grind.
Yeah. I think people are a little afraid of social contact at sometimes. And, you know, that's okay. That's okay. But it's good to acknowledge it too.
Wes, you're just so good to just kind of riff on songwriting with people who are fans and appreciators of your work. And we're barely scratching the surface. I want listeners to know, I mean, Ra Ra Ra, it's got a number of albums. You can find the songs that we just talked about, you know, buy what you can, support what you can live. Live music is so good for us in so many ways, but I just really dig it. I got to take a quick phone call from Hoover, who's been waiting. Hey, Hoover, go ahead.
Hey, what a great show, Evan. I don't think you've ever had a bad show, and if you would, I probably would have turned it off anyway.
Wow, man. I don't know, man.
These guys are lucky to have an interview with you on our Rochester radio. Look, you're the guy you were just talking to who came up. He reminds me of a young Jackson Browne about 30 years ago. He used to say the same things in interviews, and look at the music he's created in his lifetime. So he's standing in some good stead right now. But you were talking earlier about different concerts. I've been around the country to concerts. My daughter was a Deadhead in California. I've been to Deadhead concerts. I've been to jazz concerts in England, in Switzerland. And I've been all, you know, I'm an old guy, but I've been around in these concerts. The best concert I ever would go to was when I was a kid. Wilmer and the Dukes used to play at the DeMay Hotel on North Greece Road. It was an old wooden hotel with a big ballroom, and they would get up on the stage and they would play for about 2 to 3 hours. And it was all just a bunch of kids and some older guys. And there was no alcohol. People were just sweating and dancing for hours. And Wilmer with his saxophone would stand up there and encourage everybody to keep doing it. It was fantastic. But the absolute best concert I've ever been to was last night on our street. Three of our neighbors, we all went out with our kids and grandkids, and we walked around the neighborhood and we went up to older people who live by themselves or they're disabled. And we made a list of about 10 people. And we called them earlier and we said, in about an hour or later this afternoon, we're coming out with the kids to sing. And I got videos, talk about recording stuff. I got videos of the kids last night singing Jingle Bells and different stuff on the porches of some people who really were just stuck in their homes lonely. And they gave the kids candy and the biggest smiles you'll ever see. But that's the best concert I've ever been to.
Well, Hoover, there's something really beautiful about that. And I got to say, that ties exactly to what Wes was writing about with Friendly Neighbor. I mean, sometimes it's worth it to remind ourselves that carols are not creepy. You know, singing together is fine. that's actually pretty cool. Wes, before we let you go here, thank you, Hoover. That was really, really lovely. What are you guys up to next? What do you want people to know that Ra Ra Riot is doing next?
Well, we're working on more new music. I just actually got back on Monday from Frenchtown, New Jersey, which is where we're recording. I don't know if I want to say a full record yet, but we're recording some new music and hoping to have it out in the first half of the year. We'll say that.
Well, thank you for making the time. And I want to thank all of our guests here. Wes Miles, Ra Ra Riot, the band behind the theme of this program, whether listeners know it or not, now you do. So find the band, support them. Good luck to you, Wes. I'd love to be in touch again. I really appreciate the conversation and the thoughtfulness that you bring to the craft. It's so cool, man.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for bringing on Adam.
Adam Gold.
Talk to you soon, Adam.
Yeah, Adam's the owner of Funk and Waffles. That's where you'll see Adam, whether it's for waffles or for music or for both. Adam, thank you for making time for the program.
Totally my pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome stuff. And Patrick Hoskin, you'll find his work in City Magazine. We're fulfilling these dreams, man. You, Rah Rah Riot, back together. It's like you're back at St. Bonaventure, man.
Unbelievable. Dream come true.
What an hour. From all of us, thank you. And I want to remind you that the Connections theme music is the song that you're listening to that's going to take you right out of the show today. It's called Shadow Casting. That's Rah Rah Riot. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Media.